is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Nigeria, the election underway, the most significant election in the African continent in this calendar year. The results are temporarily advancing the case for each of the individual actors, the contenders. However, the overall story is far from finished, and I welcome Gregory Copley, the editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who's been my guide on the Nigerian election, pitting the incumbent party of President Buhari, the All Progressive Party, against three challengers. Gregory, right now we have incomplete results, but Bola Tinubu of the governing All Progressive Congress Party is ahead 35% to 30% to 26% to a lesser number. We need to discuss what these numbers mean, because this is an election that'll have two parts, presuming the first round doesn't lead to a majority of for one person, and also that one person winning, what is it, 24 of the 26 states? Good evening to you, Gregory.
Good evening, John. Yes, the winner has to get an absolute majority to win in the first round, and then but that also has to entail winning more than 25% of the vote in at least 24 states plus the federal capital territory. So far, nobody has reached that threshold. Right now, the APC former governor of Lagos State, Mr. Bola Tinubu, has the majority of votes, or so it's alleged, and I'll get into that. But the former vice president, Atiku Abubakar, of the People's Democratic Party, PDP, is second and is the main contender. And the young Labour Party candidate, Peter Obi, has only 20%. And it's unlikely that Peter Obi and the Labour Party are going to get the required 24 states where they've achieved more than 25% of the vote. So what Peter Obi's Labour Party has done has been, as we discussed in the past, has been to drain off votes from the two major parties. And as we thought would happen, Obi has taken more votes from Tinubu in the All Progressives Congress than he has from Abubakar. So if we get to a situation which would be more or less unprecedented in Nigerian politics, where we have a second round runoff vote, it would be most likely between Mr. Tinubu and Atiku Abubakar. At that particular time, we would start to see where the votes from the other two main second-tier candidates, Peter Obi and Kwan Kwaso from the Nigerian People's Party, the NNPP, where their votes would go. Now, the NNPP candidate, Mr. Kwan Kwaso, basically only had a stronghold in Kano up in the north. And already, Atiku Abubakar has comprehensively swept the northern states. So in other words, if he was going for the president of northern Nigeria, he would have won in something approaching more than a landslide. It would have been just a wipeout. But of course, he's got to get votes for the whole country. So the next thing he would do would be he would almost certainly pick up most of the NNPP or Kwan Kwaso votes in Kano State. Then he would, I think, pick up a lot of the Labour Party or Obi votes in the south, south-south and southeast, largely because Obi and his supporters really were going after and attacking Tinubu, the corrupt former governor of Lagos State. And Obi won the vote in Lagos State for the presidency. So that's remarkable. That shows the degree of hostility which the Lagos voters had for Tinubu. And let's face it, they knew him best of all from his position as governor. So what we've got right now is a situation where in this first round of voting, something like 60 or more percent of the votes so far has been to against Mr. Tinubu and the outgoing party, the APC, or Progressives Congress. So you've got a situation where if Tinubu was to win today, he would have won the vote with two-thirds of the country voting against him. So it doesn't bode well for a unified country. So everyone's going to have to hope for a runoff election, which would be in about 3 weeks' time, should it occur. And in that case, I think the odds are very much with Atiku Abubakar, who is the man with the plan. He's really done his sums on what it takes to reinvigorate the Nigerian economy, ensure a rapid move toward vastly improved security in the country, and to open up the prospect for foreign direct investment on a large scale, which we have not seen in Nigeria for the past decade.
Let's talk about policies. The president at the moment, President Muhammadu Buhari, is said to be significant because even in terms of corruption, he's a master planner of corruption.
And that's right. That's absolutely right. In fact, when he was first the military president of Nigeria, when he came in with the coup in December 31st, 1983, his whole campaign at that point, why they had the coup, was to oust the civilian government of Mr. Shigari, who was patently corrupt, and Buhari was campaigning on an anti-corruption ticket with this coup. And they did institute an incredible anti-corruption campaign, which gave him, if you like, which gave Buhari these anti-corruption credentials. However, he became corrupt, and his administration for the past 8 years has been intensely corrupt, whether not just from the corruption which centering around him and his wife, but around a lot of other officials who have been part of his coterie. So that has been widely observed and detested, but it's also allowed corrupt military officials who were also present during the Goodluck Jonathan administration before this, but that's meant that we've seen the whole security situation fall apart because of corruption in the military leadership. So, but basically, we see President Buhari wanting to see a successor in place who would protect him from any, attacks on his credibility or
that would be Tinubu. Tinubu would assure that Buhari is secure. Now, Atiku Abubakar, the chief rival, what are his policies?
His policies are small government, free markets, transparent investment policies and protection of property. So he's got a very detailed set of policies about how he goes about correcting the security situation from day one, improving the accountability and management of the armed forces, restoring a chain of command within military and security operations. He would open up the legislation on mining investment and who controls the minerals, because that's been a big bone of contention. Nigeria is currently, for example, one of the world's significant gold exporters, and yet legally it doesn't export any. What's happening is that you've got illegal gold mining, siphoning gold out through Ghana to be processed abroad in places like Australia. So the revenues aren't coming into the country, and you're not getting industrial scale exploitation of gold or other minerals. So that will be a move very, very quickly. So there are things like that, how to address subsidies on petrol for the domestic civilian population. It's not the problem so much of do you pay a subsidy for petrol consumption for the public, or don't you? It's the way in which it is done which has been corrupted, because the present scheme has allowed a lot of people to get into the petroleum business and manipulate the markets and get subsidies without delivering the fruits of that to the consumer. So you've got Atiku really being a modern planned approach to governance. He's definitely the new thinker. Peter Obi talks about being the leader for the future and the modern guy who's going to create jobs for youth, but he didn't come up with any really coherent policies, no clear-cut policies, which have stood any kind of rigor at all. He's just made a lot of very, very popular statements, which, of course, endeared him to the media, particularly in London and Western Europe. But the reality is that Obi was a populist, hoping to build a groundswell with the youth, and he did, but that was only in the cities. And what we saw with the election so far is that although the Independent National Election Commission was able to get out something like 90 million permanent voter cards, which was thought would have given an indication as to how many people were going to cast their votes in Saturday's elections. But the reality was that a huge percentage of those people with their permanent voter cards chose not to vote at all. So we had a very, very low voter turnout. And I think part of that was due to the fact that it looked like there was not going to be a clear winner with the three horse race. So if it comes down to a two-horse race between Atiku Abubakar and Bola Tinubu, then I think we'll see people saying, oh, this is going to be an election between highly corrupt politics of decline versus hope for the future. I think this is going to work very much in Atiku Abubakar's favor.
And what's the timeline for knowing the first round results? 2 days, 3 days, a week?
Oh, I think it's going to be more like a week,
okay.
At least. It's because of the attacks on polling stations and on polling officials where papers have been stolen and dispersed. We see that there are real problems there. That's delayed things a lot. And I might point out that these disturbances are almost certainly caused by the All Progressives Congress. We have to remember that the two previous elections, which got Muhammadu Buhari into office, saw massive violence and intimidation at various levels around the election, the two elections which got him in. And he's the one that's trying to ensure that Tinubu gets reelected. So he and his party have a long history of violence at the ballot box.
Gregory Copley, editor and publisher, Defense and Foreign Affairs. The Chinese have a peace plan. It went to Brussels, the United States, the capitals of Europe, as well as Moscow. Moscow rejected. But then again, when we come back, Moscow's reconsidering the Chinese peace plan. Why? This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Madden.
What happened to her, Mario? How could she simply disappear after she was with you?
I don't have answers for that.
48 Hours at CBS News present.
I'm just going to ask you straight out. Did you kill Christy Wilson?
No, I had nothing to do with her disappearance.
Another season of My Life of Crime with Erin Moriarty. Award-winning correspondent Erin Moriarty brings you face-to-face with killers.
I will never say that I'm a cold-blooded killer. I will never say I'm a murderer.
And the people they took from.
My son died running for his life.
This season, follow the evidence with Erin, beyond the speculation, including in the death of boxing legend Arturo Gatti.
My gut says I don't think he would take his life.
I know my husband killed himself.
Listen to My Life of Crime from 48 Hours on Amazon Music or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Mo Rocca, and it's been a while. But I've been busy digging up even more stories about the people and things of the past that are fascinating me now.
What did your father think of the label, of the whole idea of the Latin lover?
From the screen idols who redefined Hollywood's leading man.
I think it was a love-hate relationship. My dad hated the word macho.
That's what I call the Latin lover type of a role, which is one-dimensional.
To the dog who introduced millions of kids to classic literature.
I remember, like, on my 10th birthday, I think it was, we were going to go mini-golfing, and I insisted, but we had to stay home for Wishbone first.
Listen to Mobituaries wherever you get your podcasts.
Now to exclusive reporting from CBS News.
Join Gail King, Tony DeCoppel, and Nate Burleson for original reporting. CBS Mornings, weekday mornings on CBS.